So what impact do you think we should have to improve sustainability within construction? Because it feels like within construction, especially in the sector I work with, small and medium-sized projects, people will not do certain things unless they are told or enforced to do them.
I think obviously one approach, as you mentioned, is...
Do you have advice as an educator as well? That probably helps, is how people can gain or sustainably gather these skills so they upskill themselves. Like, how do we bridge that skill gap?
So therefore, then skills and competencies become important. So within RICS's competency framework, is already a mandatory requirement. So you need to know about in order to become a chartered surveyor through any of our 20 pathways, land surveying, QS and construction, or project management.
Are we ready to transform the construction industry for a sustainable future? With the world aiming for net zero emissions by 2050, it's time we dive deep into this challenge. You're listening to Bricks and Bytes. Today, we're thrilled to have Anil Sawhney, the head of sustainability at RICS. He's on the front lines of pushing construction industry towards greener practices. In today's chat, we'll uncover a startling fact. Fewer than 20% of construction professionals track their carbon footprint. This highlights a critical gap and the pressing need for a shift. We're also looking at the looming threat of billion-dollar fines for carbon emissions in New York City by 2030. How can we turn these challenges into opportunities? Circularity could be our golden ticket, cutting emissions and opening new doors for businesses. Plus, we'll get in construction 4.0. It's not just jargon, it's a real plan for integrating sustainability into our daily work in construction. If you're enjoying our podcast, you can support us by heading over to www.bricksbytes.show and signing up to our newsletter. This is an easy and free way which helps us keep the podcast going. In addition, you'll receive each of the key insights from all guests we have on, as well as some bonus content about what's going on in the wider world of construction tech. And now, an announcement from our sponsor, Shift. BIM often feels overwhelming for contractors. That's why this episode is brought to you by Shift. They'll help you tackle all your digital needs from 3D BIM modeling to 3D strategy and beyond. Visit maketheshft.digital for more information. Anil, I'll do a light introduction to you. A lot more behind how you got to here, but obviously you don't get to these places without the deep, rich history that you have. So you're currently the head of sustainability at RICS. You're an educator at various universities such as Liverpool, John Moores, Columbia University, University of Southern California. You're a researcher and, most importantly, a construction tech enthusiast. Is that all right? Anything that I missed or to add?
Well, I think that covers it well. I'm passionate about construction tech, obviously, with so much going on in that space.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So something else you say you're passionate about is advancing professional development standards and knowledge. So can you explain what standards are in the context of your work?
Sure. So RICS, as you know, are all efforts that we put in are to help create a sustainable, inclusive, built and natural environments. Now, being a global professional body with public good at its core, we deliver that vision through a set of international standards, guidance, and practice information. So since it's a self-regulated entity, we produce international standards by which then our members practice and provide services. So a good example, which is probably top of the mind, is a consistent international data-driven standard for measuring carbon, which we are going to go into detail. So we produced that international standard in September 2023. Second edition of the standard really is a how-to guide. If you, as an RICS member, are going to do a whole-life carbon assessment, then we require you to utilize the methodology provided in that standard. So that drives best practice. It drives consistent, integrated approach, a comprehensive view, in this instance, life cycle carbon emissions. So that's one example. We also, as you know, 40% of our membership of 135,000 members globally practice what's called quantity surveying, cost planning, cost management. And there we produce a global professional standard in cost prediction. So what are the best practices? What should you, what type of data should you use? What kind of assumptions do you need to make? And what kind of disclosures you need to include in predicting costs of construction projects? So that's what is meant by providing international standards and guidance to our members, and in fact, to non-members also.
And how far do you look into the future, into construction technology within your work or within RICS?
So there are basically now, what I just previously explained looks as current best practice, because when you set standards, you go and see how cost is being predicted on projects or how carbon is being measured. So our international standards and guidance are how to capturing mostly current practice. But then we have a thought leadership and research group or team also that does a little bit of future gazing. So we look at 3 to 5 year horizon and see what technologies, construction tech, is coming down the pike that could have an impact on A, our members, B, on our international standards and guidance. So we produce what's called research reports. We produce something called insight papers. So for example, we have an insight paper on digital twins. And we, in fact, looked at digital twins and saw there was quite a bit of noise out there on digital twins in the operation stage of assets, right? Not much spoken about design, construction, handover of assets. So our paper focuses on the future of digital twins from a constructor's point of view. How could you utilize or prepare yourself during the design, construction, and handover phase of projects and assets? So we have a paper on AI and ML. I guess everyone these days has a paper on AI ML since it's top of the mind.
You have to have it to be a viable business.
So how does AI, generative AI, impact all practices within the built environment? As you may know, RICS has about 20 pathways through which you can become a chartered member, beginning from land surveying all the way up to asset management. So AI may impact land surveying. It may impact facility management or asset management. So our paper sort of broadly touches on various practice areas and this future technology, or perhaps technology that's already here, and its impact on our practice areas, which then means impact on our standards. So are there ethical issues? Are there data security issues? Are there data management issues and so on, which we need to incorporate into what we call our technical standards and our conduct standards? Because every surveyor, chartered surveyor, is also bound by conduct standards that include several things relating to conduct of our members. And I'm a fellow of the RICS, so I'm a staff as well as a member of RICS.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So you mentioned whole life carbon. What was the name of the standard, whole life carbon assessment?
So the full name is RICS Professional Standard for Whole Life Carbon Assessment for the Built Environment, second edition. So the first edition was released in 2017. And now with the funding from Department from Transport, Scottish Future, and some funding from Europe, we have revised, updated, and expanded that professional standard. It's a second edition of that standard that's now has superseded the 2017 edition.
Okay, got it. So presumably this kind of plays into your role as head of sustainability, RICS. So that role, what does it mean to be the head of sustainability? Like, what do you kind of do in your day-to-day, and what are you trying to achieve?
Sure. So it has an internal and an external interface. Internally, many of our teams, like land surveying professional practice team, the construction professional practice team, valuation, everyone is pretty much involved in sustainability related projects and activities. So one role internally is to ensure that we coordinate all these activities and provide a glued up and connected picture. Rather than saying valuation and ESG, what's the impact of all these activities and projects at the higher level on the built environment through sustainability? So in a way, program management, planning, and coordinating and creating a connected picture internally, reporting, ensuring that our members are aware of what's happening within those teams. The external facing role is to represent RICS in various conferences, webinars, podcasts, events, sharing what we are doing. Large group of our team, as well as members, for example, recently were at COP28, where RICS was given the observer status in the blue zone. So we were able to have meaningful exchanges about our member activities, our standards, with a lot of other global stakeholders. So managing these external stakeholders, representing RICS and our sustainability program in those stakeholder groups is another part of my role. Obviously, we do that as a team, but I help coordinate and lead the coordination of all these project related activities within RICS. A big component also is messaging and influencing. So that what we do, if it just stays within our members or a smaller group, the impact would not be high. So in order to create a higher impact, I have to do messaging, influencing. We also have a lot of work we are doing in skills and competencies. As you can imagine, this is sort of, for all of us, including me, a new area of carbon emissions calculation. So how do we share that best practice, that influence through our skills and competencies framework? So our products team is developing a significant program for training in 2024, focusing on broader themes of sustainability. And our sustainability program primarily is currently resting on four pillars: decarbonization, biodiversity, circularity, and then adaptation and resilience in the built environment. So we would have a program that connects these dots and then goes deeper, perhaps, into decarbonization for 2024.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You probably answered it partially now, but what is it actually, sustainability within the built environment? What exactly are we talking about, and how can we measure it if we make progress on, quarterly basis, monthly, yearly basis, every decade? How should we look into it?
I think that's a brilliant question. And really, you need to look at it from various dimensions. The first dimension is organization. Sustainability, whatever way you define it, and I'm going to go into that dimension of definition also, can be reported at an organizational level or at your projects and assets level, obviously with linkage between that top to bottom approach. So sustainability at an organizational level, there are various frameworks currently available globally to report your carbon footprint, to report your other aspects of sustainability. At the projects and assets level, really the whole life carbon assessment professional standard that we have, and tied to that a reporting framework called ICMS, third edition, these are again at a project and asset level. So one dimension is the scale at which you talk about sustainability. And then maybe another dimension to look at is there are the core definition, the simplest definition of sustainability is really economic sustainability, environmental sustainability, and social sustainability. But then there is something left out because ESG is another important term that's used in the industry. So the E part is covered through environmental sustainability. The S part is covered through social sustainability, but you have governance that's still left from ESG. So if you were to take a big picture, it'll be about environmental sustainability, social sustainability, economic sustainability or prosperity, and lastly, about governance of our projects, assets, and organizations. So that is the dimension that sits across in that direction. Now, within this big picture, there are some ISO standards that help you define, okay, if you're looking at these outcomes of environment, economic, social, and governance, but how do you measure? What are the detailed metrics? So there's ISO 21931, which you can use to define a much more granular way of measuring sustainability. So for example, you can measure employment generated by your project, asset, or organization that counts towards social sustainability. You can measure GWP, global warming potential, of your activities through scope 1, scope 2, scope 3, and that counts towards environmental sustainability. Value created by your project asset in the community, that's economic. So there's about, I think, 30 different measures which you can actually then go measure for your projects and assets. We don't do it right now, but there is a framework available to look at it. In the UK, attempt has been made in which RICS was involved, called the Social Value Toolkit, which sort of looks at these dimensions when you set up projects at the very beginning, especially public sector projects. So I think that's maybe a longish definition of sustainability, but that's what we look at. But then as an organization, we can't boil the ocean. So what we've done is for 2024, we are focusing on decarbonization because of obviously our standard. Biodiversity, which is obviously very important in the UK, the biodiversity net gain formula that's already available, and then circularity, which sits on top of whole life carbon, and then lastly, adaptation and resilience to climate. Those four pillars are what we are working on out of that very big picture that you can see.
Oh, very nice.
Great. Thank you for that. So I just wanted to touch on, because standards are kind of like a best practice within the industry and people follow them. But they usually have a choice or to follow best practice or to follow minimum requirements imposed by the government, really, within a particular country, right? So what impact do you think we should have to improve sustainability within construction? Because it feels like within construction, especially in the sector I work with, small and medium-sized projects, people will not do certain things unless they are told or enforced to do them. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
I think, again, a fantastic point, because our sector is defined by various spectrums, right? Projects can be simple. Maybe we can call a production home building at the easier end of the spectrum compared to perhaps industrial process plant or a semiconductor high-tech facility or a data center. So A, obviously, there is going to be variation of application across that dimension. But then we also have our project teams. There may be project teams members who are maybe one or two people operation. They provide value. But how do we bring them on board in this journey towards sustainability? I think, obviously, one approach, as you mentioned, is regulation. So if you look at in the U.S., where I'm based, in 2024, New York City is going to have the New York Local Law 97, it's famously called, which is going to impose a carbon tax or a carbon penalty of $268 per tons of carbon dioxide emitted over and above the benchmark. So an industry body called the New York Real Estate Board did an impact study. So they took at most building projects in Manhattan. These are existing assets. If you measure the impact of this penalty, by 2030, there will be a $1 billion penalty if you don't retrofit and improve these assets. So Do you think that kind of financial incentive is going to drive down the supply chain improvements? Maybe if I'm a small contractor, I may get a job within that retrofit where I'm not fully aligned to the sustainability drive, but I'm still participating. And hopefully the awareness will increase and then you will see how that is happening. So our standards go above and beyond the minimum, right? If there's a minimum requirement, our standard is first of all, whole life. So includes embodied carbon, operational carbon, biogenic carbon, and even user carbon is defined within our standard from really module A all the way up to module D as given in our standard. So essentially, I think regulation going above and beyond the minimum standard and the upcoming financial implications are going to drive. I know in the UK Parliament, the embodied carbon standard is being discussed or a bill is being discussed. Planning authorities are now requiring that as you submit a permitting application, you give a whole life view of your asset. What are you going to do when you deconstruct? When are you going to do at end of life? So more and more, for all of us, it's a difficult journey, but one we have to take, move away from construction fragmented from operation end of life to a more of a whole of life view of our projects and assets. Because if you have to count carbon, then you need to know if this window is going to be replaced in 15 years and what's the impact of cost and carbon emissions of that change. And many authorities are at least mandating or requiring that you do that analysis and share it with them. There is some jurisdictions that are requiring 10% reduction in carbon emissions, embodied carbon emissions, through use of low carbon concrete, low carbon steel on projects. So that's also coming. And our industry has to start thinking about those, already started thinking about these aspects. And I think tech and digital and data all are going to play a very crucial role. Obviously, the big players, medium-sized players, will have an easier transition. Perhaps the smaller, medium-sized entities may find it initially difficult, not only because of perhaps investments, but also skills and competencies that may be required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you mentioned about tech and data. It's always an interesting point because adds more, potentially more complex, whilst it making things simpler in the short term, it definitely adds more complexity to people because they have to build a process around this or even upskill to learn how to use the technology. And in addition to that, to use the technology to track or measure or improve their sustainability or carbon footprint. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword for a lot of people. Maybe two questions. First is, do you have advice as an educator as well? That probably helps, is how people can gain or sustainably gather these skills so they upskill themselves. Like, how do we bridge that skills gap?
Sure. So I think connecting, transitioning from Martin's question, I want to first try and share a very interesting piece that I read on iStruct-E's website. In 2019, the structure engineers said, we're going to treat sustainability the same way we treat safety, right? So when you design a structure, you don't think safety independently or in a fragmented way. It's deep into our work processes, practices. If I use an analysis tool, it's about safety. It's about structural integrity. So they are saying, or they have promised, that structural engineers would look at sustainability the same way they look at the safety. So that's an important idea. So we need to start thinking of integrating sustainability or decarbonization into our existing work practices and workflows. So if you're a designer, a quantity surveyor, or a project manager, you got to bring aspects of decarbonization into your work practices. For example, if you're a project manager or a cost manager, you may have a carbon budget off of which you have to operate, very much like a cost dimension. So how do you make sure that on a construction site, you don't have waste, because waste is going to cause problems in terms of decarbonization? So that kind of integration into your work practices will then show professionals the need to start learning about these concepts. So therefore, then skills and competencies become important. So within RICS's competency framework, sustainability is already a mandatory requirement. So you need to know about sustainability in order to become a chartered surveyor through any of our 20 pathways, land surveying, QS and construction, or project management. But these need to be upgraded. So in 2024, we are going to be releasing a training program that will have modules. The first module, perhaps, is Introduction to Sustainability for the Built Environment. Meaning, when we say biodiversity, what do we mean? When we say economic sustainability, what do we mean? When we say environmental sustainability, what do we mean? And so on. So that introductory layer, even if you're not going to practice sustainability, you should be doing that introductory module on sustainability, decarbonization, net zero, these main concepts that are top of the mind and everyone is speaking about them in every, pretty much every gathering that you go to. So that introductory piece gives that kind of awareness. And then depending on your work and depending on your interest, you can go into a vertical. So we are going to be having a training program on the use of whole life carbon assessment professional standard. Very detailed. You can learn and get accredited to do assessments of carbon on projects and assets using our standard. There may be similar thing for ESG and valuation, for example, a similar thing for biodiversity. So if you have to report on biodiversity net gain, today, from the UK government's website, you can download an Excel spreadsheet in which you can see the impact of your project and how you're going to overcome the impact of your project and asset using the concept of biodiversity net gain. So do you want to keep those pieces separate and fragmented, or do you want to connect them to BIM? Obviously, for BIM and CDE, if they are our core work practices and information management is our core principle, then wouldn't we want to connect these new dimensions? Because if safety is connected, sustainability or carbon right now, probably the loudest voice in the built environment sector, but it's not the only voice. It's one of the outcomes that we want to have. Why don't we try and connect work practices, information management processes, and our digital tools contact deep into our traditional work practices also? Otherwise, we'll create another silo.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I struggle with as a structural engineer is that we don't have enough innovation within material engineering, in my view, that can be pushed through the bigger scale. So there are solutions which would allow us to design smaller sections, or we don't get in new materials invented really, right? So I really struggle with this part. If we want to become more sustainable, and let's say structure is quite a significant portion of our building, or construction materials are a significant portion of our building, and how they then add up to the carbon emissions, then how can we get about it? It feels like the material engineering is not keeping the pace of the theme of sustainability. That's just my feeling.
I think to some extent you're right. But again, means there is some movement there, even though RICS, given our background and our expertise, the areas that we work in, material science obviously is not one of those. But if you look at it, it's really, and if you focus just on carbon, you can use the 80-20 principle. 80% of the emissions probably come from top 2, 3, 4, 5 materials. So cement, concrete, steel, these are probably the major issues that we need to resolve. So for economy-wide, there are efforts to decarbonize the materials. The UN, for example, has what's called the Industrial Deep Decarbonization Initiative, where they are trying to now put targets like 30% less emission from cement that's going to be manufactured. So if that reduction takes place, and if structural engineers innovate the way structures are designed, a combination of the two is going to give you the results you're looking for. But you're absolutely right. Are we doing enough in terms of these newer materials, maybe bio materials, maybe more use of, I don't know, timber because it's biogenic, it stores carbon. Are we looking at carbonation as a capture mechanism in concrete structures? All those aspects are being studied, but you're right, the infusion or diffusion of these within practice is probably still some time away. So so within this space, there are so many layers that you need to address. Because if you're predicting the carbon emissions of your asset over a 60-year life, by then the energy grid itself is going to decarbonize. How do you estimate that decarbonization? Materials that are being produced will get decarbonized. How do you bring in that material decarbonization also? That's actually included in our professional standard. The WLCA standard, second edition, talks about how do you address those issues.
Yeah, nice. So starting moving on to some examples, could you give some maybe some stuff that's currently being developed, or technology, even software, hardware? You think could help sustainable efforts within that?
That's probably one of the important things. If we have to make an implementation of, let's say, just the standard, you need digital tools. So let me just sort of picture of where we think is moving is essentially an how-to guide. How, if you have this project, make a residential development, how do you measure carbon in an integrated, consistent, transparent way? So it tells you how to. The standard called the ICMS third edition, which says how to report and report. It's a taxonomy which not only lets you report carbon, but it also lets you report life cycle cost. So reporting comes through our second pillar. Third pillar of this is, what are the targets, right? What is your carbon budget? If you have to achieve by 2050 near zero carbon, for example, or infrastructure, what is your target and how do you go to that target? So meeting that target is going to come through the work that the UK net zero carbon building standard is doing, and it's going to be released soon. So to measure, how to report, what are your targets and carbon budget? And then sitting in between these three major pillars is what digital tools are there to do all these three things. What is the data that you need? Because if you're going to say, okay, I have X cubic meters of concrete in my project, what is the carbon footprint? We need to have an agreed database of emissions that comes through what's called EPDs or environmental product declarations. So sitting in between these three major pillars, if you just narrowly focus on decarbonization of new and existing assets, you need to support all of this through data, information management, and digital tools. So what we are doing is there are prominent measurement tools or what's called life cycle assessment tools out there in the market that are being extensively used. We are aligning those tools to the WLCA second edition. Most of these are already aligned to our first edition. So we have a time period of July 1, 2024, when our standard becomes mandatory. So it was released in September and becomes mandatory on July 1, 2024. So during this time, we are meeting and talking to these software vendors who will try and align their tools for these calculations. The second thing that we've done is the whole life carbon assessment uses ICMS third edition taxonomy to report. So reporting is globally agreed through ICMS. Let me just briefly give you information about ICMS. It's the International Cost Management Standard, which has been produced by a coalition of 50 professional bodies globally. So 50. ACOST in the UK, for example, Australian Institute of Quantity Surveyors, American Association for the Advancement of Cost Engineers in the US, the Canadian Institute of Quantity Surveyors are just some examples, including RICS, of these coalition members. So our third edition of ICMS, and I'm the chair of the Standard Setting Committee, have now created a very simple Excel templates. And those are available through our JSON and XML-based data standards on GitHub also, where you can take the reporting framework and all, if all of us start producing to this agreed taxonomy and reporting structure, then we can start benchmarking. Remember that middle piece of data, benchmarks, information management flow, and digital tools. They all come together through ICMS. So ICMS provides a high-level taxonomy for reporting life cycle costs and life cycle carbon emissions for all building types and 18 infrastructure types, bridge or a port or any other infrastructure type that you can think of. So that's freely available, open source. It's captured as a data RICS data standard on GitHub and XML. And entities like Autodesk Takeoff, for example, tool incorporates ICMS or lets you report in ICMS. A global tool called EC3, embodied carbon calculator, construction carbon calculator, also incorporates ICMS and can let you have reports of embodied carbon calculations from their web-based free tool that's publicly available in ICMS format. So I think technology, construction tech, and there are so many startups in this space in climate tech that are already addressing the issue of data, EPDs, for example, environmental product declarations. There are so many databases and sources available in startups that are looking at that space so that in your design process itself, you can drag and drop a new material going back to what Martin said and see what's the carbon impact. Is there going to be a reduction and perhaps an impact on the cost also? So this combination, I think, are some examples of where innovation, especially in construction tech, is going to help sustainability.
Nice.
Thank you for that. Anil, I just want to touch on, you mentioned that actually zero by 2050. So what does it actually mean? So as an example, if we build a structure, a building, which is not designed or built right now as a net zero, it will not be net zero by 2050, feels like obviously. So how people should be looking at, if we're building something now and we want to be net zero by 2050, how is it supposed to work?
So now, first of all, you know, there is no agreed definition. So if you look at COP28, they released what's called the stock take, the buildings breakthrough initiative produced a report saying there's no agreed definition. So that's itself a problem. So how can you meet a target if the definition is unclear? The second thing is, how do you set those targets? So there's a global initiative called SBTI, the Science-Based Targets Initiative, which is setting at organizational level, if you have projects and assets, what's that curve that you need to follow in the near term? So 2030 targets and then 2050 targets to make sure their entire portfolio is net zero. When they say net zero, because they're going to be loads, emissions, and there may be some gains, you can capture carbon. Down the road, I think you'll have structures that will absorb carbon and reduce the impact. And then there will be some residual carbon, as you are saying, right? You may not have met the whole requirement of your net zero by that deadline. So that residual carbon may have to be dealt with in different ways, through carbon capture and utilization technologies, through other mechanisms. Mm-hmm. But the point is, we need to be going on this gliding towards net zero. And if there are residuals, mm-hmm. which I think most likely, as you pointed out, will be, most people don't think will meet those targets. Therefore, the definition of net zero itself is a challenge. People debate about that. But so the remaining carbon emissions, we'll have to deal with them through other technologies.
Very interesting. So feels like the fabric of the building and the structure of the building will not change quite significantly in terms of material engineering, at least, unless something will be invented. So we will be hoping that the technologies which will be removing carbon from the building or decreasing the emissions will basically lower down this sum to zero to have net zero really by whatever the year it's going to be. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
No, I think important to also understand is there are many, many layers, right? The economy itself will decarbonize. Outside of the construction sector, when cement is produced, electricity is generated, there are economy-wide efforts also going on of decarbonization. So that's going to have an impact, overall impact. The operational carbon itself, we've been studying for 20 years or more. So we do energy modeling, we reduce that. So that will also start to go down. But more importantly, I think it'll help people think, do I need to have a new build or can I reuse an existing asset? Why do I throw all the concrete and structural steel away? Why don't I use that in either a new project or retool this project into a new asset? So that's going to come into the discussion also. So sitting on all top of all of this would be circularity. So can I reuse these materials? That's why the concept in Europe of material banks, buildings are material banks, where you don't just throw away stuff, you can take it and repurpose it and reuse it. So circularity principles also need to be addressed. So it's a very complex puzzle with various moving parts, and we need to all figure this out. Mm.
Okay, mm-hmm. I know. So that was a very nice in-depth discussion on sustainability in the built world. I'd like to just touch very briefly on your key teachings at your various universities that you're part of. So broad question, what would you say your key teachings are? And it doesn't necessarily have to be related to sustainability. It can be philosophical if you want to go down that route.
Sure. So I'm very passionate about staying engaged with students. It helps me come up with new ideas, learn from them also through the mentoring program. So in 2020, I co-edited a handbook on Construction 4.0. So it's called Construction 4.0 and Innovation Space for the Built Environment, where we tried to take this glued up approach, saying that we have basically various technologies, Industry 4.0 technologies, and we are in the habit of treating them independently. So when it comes to BIM, we focus on BIM. When it comes on Lean as an enabler, we focus on Lean. Is there an Industry 4.0 kind of an equivalent framework, paradigm, operating system where we can take a glued up picture? Think of these technologies in a way that we connect them together, create a new operating model, which we call Construction 4.0, where you focus on outcomes, focus on data and information management principles rather than on software individually or emerging trends, technologies, and enablers independently. So that book has been adopted by some universities and even some companies. I spoke to Hilti, for example. They looked at that book. So many organizations are using that book as a framework for also modernizing the way they think about industrialized construction or construction 4.0 technologies. So recently, Boston University adopted the book and they're launching a new course in fall of 2024, which will be focused on my book. So I'm very passionate about that. Sustainability is one aspect. It's one outcome that we focus on in terms of what's happening in construction 4.0 space and education.
Nice. Martin, one more from you.
Yes, but I will still be on the sustainability path. It's not going to be off topic, Owen, sorry. So if we look at climate risks versus developing economies, like, for example, in Asia, I will put India as an example, as I travel quite often, where the construction infrastructure is absolutely booming. There is so much development happening there. And comparing that to the standards that West is kind of imposing on the Western contractors, or society, let's put it. How do we look into it globally, where we in the West have developed lots of beautiful buildings, infrastructure, and benefit from there? And can we impose these same standards on undeveloped areas in the world? How do you see that?
I mean, that's an excellent question. So you brought up India. I'm from India, so very passionate about what's happening in India. I think one of the things we need to understand is in the developed world, mature economies, the focus is going to be mostly on existing builds. New builds, if you scale them relatively, the portion would be less compared to retrofits, existing assets. If you look at India, I think by some measures, 70% of the built assets are yet to be built in India. So we've got to focus on new construction. And then there is this debate about who caused emissions and who should pay for them and so on. I'm going to stay away from it. Why? Because, you know, Martin and Owen, you get a large consulting deal in India, you're a global player. You're going to go contribute to that large project in India. So as global professionals, we need to address the problem from a technical point of view. So India also has to embrace standards, right? We're looking at creating, I think in 2022, November, a new act was passed, which now starts looking at not only net zero energy buildings, but also carbon. So the recognition, obviously it's much slower, but the recognition of carbon emissions from built assets is increasing. In fact, the G20 presidency was in India, so I presented to a large group on the importance of decarbonization. So there's a lot of innovation taking place in India in terms of appropriate use of material. If nothing else, there are two very important things that impact when I visit India. Pollution, right? And if you continue to construct the way we construct, we add to, if nothing else, dust. Construction dust is a major problem. Pollution and the availability of resources. Where are we going to get those resources if we don't start thinking about efficiency? So efficiency connects to sustainability. Efficiency then connects to emissions. And therefore, we can all think about those aspects.
Oh, brilliant. Anil, thank you very much. I learned a lot.
Yeah, we've come to the end. Going very quickly, but no, we really appreciate it. I know, where could people find out also some of the work you've recently released? I know you just recently released a 2023 sustainability report as well. So
correct.
Anything like that you want to...
If for me, I would like to share a list of links that will be useful to the listeners of your podcast. And I'd really... thank you for giving me this opportunity to come on. I know you guys are busy talking to global thought leaders, so just being heard by you is so important for us. I will share those links, and if it could be shared with the listeners or viewers of your podcast, it's all open source. It's all freely available. It's on our website. RICS Sustainability Report gives a global picture of sentiments towards sustainability. I'm glad you brought that up. only 15% of professionals, we get about 5,000 to 6,000 responses, only 15% of the respondents currently measure embodied carbon on their projects. Mm-hmm. So you can see the distance we have to travel to do whole life carbon assessment. So I will share those links. And if you can promote, I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, we will do.
We will.
All right, now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.